Good afternoon. I'm Cara Dahl-Russell. During Just Open today, we've been listening from time to time to the new release of oboist Colin Meyer. In the last hour, we heard both the Sassoon's Oboe Sonata, very traditional work, and followed later in that hour by a more modern work called Isn't It Wonderful, where Colin played all the instruments, and I have him on the phone with me right now. Hello, Colin.
Hi, Cara. How are you?
I am just tickled pink to be talking to you. I must share with the audience, I have been so excited to talk to you ever since receiving this CD because it made me laugh out loud.
Good.
The notes on it, I thought about telling people what they said, but they're such little gems and they're tucked away in little corners that I don't want to spoil that. I'll just let them discover it for themselves. But aside from that, magnificent musicianship and a really lovely program of diverse elements from the very traditional to some sort of out there and then some very out there. And I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And that also could include your bio. Colin is not just an oboist. He plays many instruments. He's been an actor. He has worked with Cirque du Soleil. I don't even know where to start with you.
I don't even know.
So let's start with the bow tie.
Okay. the bow tie?
Yeah, I found that.
I found that at a secondhand store. You know what? I'll talk about the tux. Can I talk about the tux for one second?
Yes, you can.
Okay, so I was playing with Quartetto Gelato, which is the group that I normally play with, and we're on tour.
Yeah, now, wait a minute. Let's do sidebar. Yeah. Quartetto Gelato, a really fascinating group, a quartet that usually includes either an accordion or musette in place of the traditional piano.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the other members?
Well, I'll go on with the accordion player. He's a four-time world champion accordion player. He plays a chromatic style called the Bayan. It's got 227 buttons, and it's pretty incredible to watch. He does play piano as well, and
Quartetto Gelato is already working. You're working internationally with them, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. We tour. It varies from year to year, but I know that in its heyday, the group was going 120 concerts a year, kind of thing.
And we have aired some of the music here.
I know.
We did. We just opened one of the CDs, I think about this time last year. Again, a real mixture of some traditional works and then traditional things done with it, sort of mm-hmm. an odd slant, and then some sort of off-kilter things just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
So you were working with them.
Well, yeah. So, okay, the story about the bow tie and the tuxedo. So I was on tour with the group, and there we are doing our sound check, and I can't even remember where it was. We hear the stage manager say, okay, 15 minutes at the top of the show. And so I say, okay, well, it's time for me to get dressed. And then so I look and I realize that I've left all my clothes back at the hotel. See, I think I brought my shoes. So I panicked. So I went outside, and right across the street from where we were was a bridal shop. And so I'll just go in there instead. So I walk in there, and there was all gowns except for this one tuxedo, and it was on the mannequin. I said, it doesn't even have to fit. Just give it to me. And I liked it so much at the end of the day that I said I had to take it home.
So let's back up then.
Yes.
From the tuxedo to the beginning of your musical training.
Okay, the beginning of the musical training. Well, at about 3 and a half, I guess, I was started Suzuki violin.
So you were an infant phenomenon?
No, I was awful.
Okay.
I was awful. I was really bad. I was probably I was probably a bad student. I don't remember ever practicing. And I'm sure I drove all my teachers crazy and my parents. I can't even imagine. And so I remember going to these fiddle workshops every summer, and I enjoyed those. So I was still involved in the violin.
Suzuki camp, you mean?
Sorry?
Suzuki camp?
It was more fiddling than Suzuki.
Oh, okay.
It was all fiddling for about 2 weeks, and we were in Boise, Idaho. We learned a lot, and we had a lot of fun. So then I kind of gave up violin around grade 5, and then grade 7, I decided I'd go into band. And my band teacher said, hey, you play violin, you must have a good ear, you should try the oboe. And I said, I don't even know what that is. So that's how that started, grade 7, and played the oboe, and I guess went through all of high school. Grade 12, I was on the fence about what to do with the rest of my life, so I thought I would audition for a college for musical theater. I missed the audition by a day, so I thought, well, I guess I'm not going to be singing or dancing for a living. So I auditioned for the university on oboe. And at that point, I'd actually never taken any oboe lessons, but I was really, really naive. And so I thought, well, I have an oboe. I could probably just audition. And luckily enough, they weren't, I don't think they had any oboists in the university at that time, and I got in.
You know, this is completely wild. The day after we set up this interview, I had a dream that night that I was sitting next to a friend of mine who plays clarinet magnificently, and that I had been assigned oboe, and I didn't even know what it looked like. So it sounds pretty much the same.
Yeah, it was assigned to me. And if I had known that I would have had to make reeds for the rest of my life...
That would have scotched the deal right there.
Yeah, I would have said, give me the clarinet instead. I'll buy a box, and that'll be that.
So on this one piece, isn't it wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
You play how many instruments?
On that track, I play 10 different instruments, and there's actually 19 or 20 different tracks. So I think there's four different clarinet parts, and then two different flute parts, two different oboe parts. Three, including the solo.
So I should have introduced you as Colin Mayer Chamber Orchestra.
Yeah, it's I have a room full of instruments, and I trip over them all the time.
Your background is so diverse. So did you do any acting in college?
Well, I was involved in a group when I was in junior high and high school, and actually elementary too. It was called the Young Canadians, and it was back in Calgary, Alberta, where I grew up, and it was every night at the Stampede, they would have kids ages, I don't know, 8 till maybe 18 or 19, and sing and dance and all that stuff. And so I got involved in that, and I was more involved in that. And that was sort of my training. And then when I was in university, I did some more classes, dance classes. Then around 25, I said, you know what, I'd like to audition for some shows, because I was such a massive part of my life for a long time. In fact, it was a bigger part of my life than music was.
At that point,
yeah. Yeah, and so I said, I'm gonna give it a try. And then I auditioned for local production of Hello, Dolly, and I got it, and I was a dancing waiter. And then I worked for about 12, 13 years in between music and musical theater.
So how did Cirque du Soleil work into all of this? I thought people had to be tremendously acrobatically oriented for that.
Well, I'm lying, but it's true. I took martial arts and gymnastics as well when I was growing up. I remember doing all these different things and thinking that Cirque du Soleil would be the dream come true to work with. And there was an ad in the Musicians Union newspaper, and I phoned up and I said, hey, you know, I'd love to do this. And they said, send us a demo reel. And so I included all my acting stuff and gymnastics and martial arts. And they said, you know, there's a show that's perfect for you, and it was called Ka. That's how that all happened. So I was actually not even hired as a musician, but as a acrobat, martial artist, dancer.
Was it through that that you ended up getting more acting work?
No, it was sort of right in the middle. And Canada is an interesting place. You can be in a big production and do some really interesting things, and when it's over, you're back auditioning and you're back knocking on doors again. So it didn't open up too many doors for me, but it was an amazing experience to be able to be part of that. And besides, it was killer physical, and the last thing I wanted to do was be sore every day.
But you've ended up getting some film work, haven't you?
Yeah, a little bit of film. I was in, there was a production of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. There was a TV series, so I was a stunt ninja on an episode of that, and a few other things, and I was in the Olympics.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the big one that I left out.
Yes,
tell us what this was.
Oh, man, this was, I couldn't believe it when I got the phone call. They were looking for, it was for the Vancouver opening ceremonies, the Winter Olympics, and just 2 years ago, yeah. 2010. Yes, and they said, we're working on this thing, we've got a good idea, and we've heard that you can do both of these things we're looking for. We need someone who can play the violin and fly, do aerial work. And that's all they would tell me, because it was so secretive.
And you said yes.
And I said yes, and I didn't even know what was going on. I just said, yeah, sure, that's incredible. They wouldn't even tell me until I literally showed up there about a month before the opening ceremonies, and I found out exactly what I was going to be doing. But
thinking yes at that point?
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't know it was going to be as kind of big a spot in the opening ceremonies. You know, there was about a minute of airtime of just pretty much just me. It was flying in a blue canoe, dressed like the devil, playing the violin, suspended about 140 feet in the air. So it was pretty crazy.
And where do you go after that?
Yeah, well, you know, that was just happened. That was just at the same time I joined Quartetto Gelato.
That's where you go after
That's where I go after that. So I was in the story with Quartetto Gelato, I two major dreams. One was Cirque and one was Quartetto Gelato. When I was in third year university, fourth year actually, and I was looking for music for my recital, and I pulled out the Hummel variations because that's all I could think was interesting, because I was kind of bored with the real traditional music. And my teacher says, oh, you should listen to this CD. And it hands me the Quartetto Gelato first CD. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it, and it was the Pasquali variations that they did. And from that moment, I thought, holy man, I have to be in this group. I have to play something in a group, something like this. And so I never thought for a minute that 17, 15 years later, or whatever it was, that I'd actually be on stage performing in the group.
And how did that happen? Was it just a chance audition, or
it wasn't even. I got so lucky. I guess my philosophy for my whole career has been to say yes to everything. Everything leads, even if you think it's going to be an awful, awful experience, it always leads to something else.
I had a drama teacher at a Shakespearean theater tell me the same thing: say yes to everything. The only caveat I would say, but not in L.A. So anyway, go ahead. You said yes.
So I was taking all these freelance gigs. I had just moved to Toronto from Calgary, and I was trying to start up my career as an oboist 7 years ago. And I was making phone calls to these different people, different places, different groups, and I ended up getting a phone call. I don't know how it even happened, but to play with an Azerbaijani folk orchestra. And of course I'll do it. That sounds fine. And I go and then out of town, and the rehearsals were long. And
okay, hold on a second.
Yeah.
The average person, I think, if they're told they're going to be playing with an Azerbaijani folk orchestra, might not be, yeah, okay. So, were you already a member of the quartet at that time?
No, this was this was prior to joining the quartet. This was just, I was taking every gig that was coming towards
okay,
me.
Okay, so you said yes to that.
So I said yes. So yes to this kind of a crazy gig. And I meet a girl who's a viola player, who's super nice. And her name is Anna Antropova, and she passes my name on to a violinist named Addis Bankus, who runs a festival in Niagara. And the Quartetto Gelato, Peter DeSoto, phones up the festival director and says, I need another oboist, clarinet player. Who can you recommend? And he says, oh, I just met this guy, Colin. And that's how it happened. There was hardly even an audition. It was just kind of a perfect
serendipity
fit. And that was it.
And so then how long... have you toured with them? Are you still touring with them?
Gelato, yes. It's been 3 years now, and we've made a Christmas CD recently. We did a couple shows, a video for Bravo Network. I don't know if you know that.
No, and, I didn't know that.
Name
of the Christmas CD?
The name of the Christmas CD is called The Magic of Christmas.
The Magic of Christmas by Quartetto Gelato.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't even have to hear it to know it's going to be something special and very fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was good fun. And now we're working on an interesting project involving music and magic, putting it into a big theatrical presentation.
Wow. So then how did this CD come about? And where did this fit into all of that?
Well, we're driving, me and myself and our violinist, Peter DeSoto, we were driving somewhere together, and he says, you know, Colin, you should make a CD. And I said, okay. Just following along the lines, I said, okay, sure, yes. And I don't even know where to start with it. I'm thinking to myself, how is this even done? And so I thought about it for a long time, trying to think about what songs I could do and how I would get the money. And I realized a lot of interesting things that I didn't want to make a CD that is already out on the market.
Kind of not the standard recital CD.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, there are non-standard CDs out there.
Yes.
But they're very few. But, you know, when you look through, if you Google search classical CD albums, it's pretty, you know, pretty standard. A picture of the composer or a picture of the group posing. And it was standard music. And same with, especially with the oboe repertoire, it was either really, really modern music that didn't appeal to me. And I kind of suspected maybe wouldn't appeal to the audience. And the opposite would be the same sonatas and the same concertos that's been recorded for the past forever.
I hear our listeners breathing a sigh of relief and saying, thank you for your observation that they didn't appeal to you and might not appeal to listeners as well.
Well, I think it's important. What we're doing is, I mean, I can play for myself and I can get a lot of joy out of it, but if I'm a performer, I have to be entertaining, and there's communication that goes on between, you know, the performer and the audience. And if you're not communicating, they're not going to understand. They're not going to, and I feel like whatever message you're trying to get across could be lost. So that was how it all started, and I began to think, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this 100%. And I ended up applying for some government grants. I got a grant from the Ontario Arts Council, and I got major support from a foundation called Factor, which stands for the Foundation Assisting Canadian Talent on Recordings.
Great.
And they allowed me to commission 80% of the CD is all my commissions. They're all new. Two of them are the standards, the Sanson and the Pasculi.
Yes.
And then the rest are fun things that I wanted to do. So I phoned up my composer friends that I trusted, and I said, look, you know me. This is what I would like. And they did it, and it was brilliant.
And some of them are very theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
You should speak to the level of theatricality in some of those.
So my cello player with Quartetto Gelato, Liza McClellan, she is quite a wacky poet. And so she has these poems, hundreds of poems that she's written over the years. And on tour, when we're bored, she just likes to have people read them. And she just giggles her face off. And so I thought, hey, this is these are crazy. And I kind of kept it in the back of mind. And I thought, it reminded me of, I don't know if you know this, there's a piece, the Vaughan Williams Blake songs for oboe and voice.
Yes.
They're beautiful. But there's 10 of them, and it's really long. And
yes.
And you play them, right, and you play all 10 of them, and at first, I think first two, the audience is, wow, but then 10 movements, wow, and it just goes on forever, and it's oboe and voice. It's not a whole lot of variation in tone color necessarily. So I thought I would do not a parody, but sort of a Monty Python-esque inspired a take on the Vaughan Williams.
Homage.
An homage. So that's what I did, and I used my friend's, I used Liza's poetry, and hired my friend Rebecca Pellet to write the music, who also did Isn't It Wonderful, and I scattered them out throughout the CD as if it was, and I got this idea from a Jack Black CD, where between the songs of his comedy, he would have his little speaking comedy bits, and I thought, this would be really funny. I'd put this on throughout the CD. And
I need to tell you how rare it is to be talking to a classical musician who then says, I got this idea from a Jack Black CD?
Yeah. Well, I you know what I think? I think a lot of people probably do get ideas from like people like Jack Black, but maybe they don't follow through with it, because I think there's a real pressure to be taken seriously.
Ooh, continue with this theme.
Well, I got to say, so I told you I never studied oboe getting into university.
Mm-hmm.
I literally, thanks to my band teacher in high school, Brian Thurlacius, lent me the use of his oboe at the Navy band, and it was a lore, and I didn't know the difference. But thanks to that, and I was able to get in, I'd never taken any lessons, and there I am, and I'm just goofing around, and I'm just being crazy, and I noticed right away that there was some serious people who really frowned at what I was just... at the way I sort of treated the instrument or treated the music. And not that I treated it disrespectfully, just that I was having fun with it. I did, on my senior recital even, I was doing one of the, I think it was the Pasculi and the big cadenza at the end, and I went into splits while I was playing. and again, ruffled a bit of feathers, where people had thought about doing the stuff that's just, and I don't even want to say out of the box, because I feel like that's an overused term. But if you were to do everything that your childlike mind thinks about, we would be, I think, surrounded by so much interesting creativity and work and music. But often, like I said, we're not. We're pressured into trying to fit into this mold of being like every single other oboist in this case. If you want to play the oboe, you want to work, you have to play exactly like this. Here's the reeds, here's how you sound, here's what you wear, here's how you do your hair.
Yes.
Nobody starts playing their instrument because of that. They start playing because they like the music, and they like playing, and they like performing. And when you lose that, when you lose your creativity, all you are is recreative. I think when you're in an orchestra, we've seen this a lot. I've seen it all the time. You get some musicians who love it, and they love being there, but I would say a lot of the time they're not. They're very unhappy. Even though they're playing different music all the time and it's a great rep and they've got a great job with benefits, why are they unhappy? And I believe it comes down to this recreative nature of playing it the way it's been played for 100, 200 years.
Well, and orchestral work is just different, too, in terms of you're fulfilling someone else's vision of it.
Well, yeah, you don't take ownership over too much individual ownership over whatever you're doing. It starts behind you hiding behind your instrument, which is hiding behind sheet music, behind a music stand, behind a conductor who's got his back to the audience. So at the end of the song,
you're treading on some real sacred territory.
I know. I like orchestra music. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, you stand up and people don't really acknowledge the audience. People fix their papers and talk to their friends and play with their reeds, and they should be bowing to the audience while they're clapping. But there's a lack of true ownership of the music.
So you didn't go through the normal conservatory channels at all?
No, not at all. I took 4 years of lessons on the oboe at University of Calgary.
Okay.
And that was it. That was it. I self-taught on all my other instruments. But I guess I'm, what's the resilience, or I persevere. And I like what I'm doing.
Well, I have to say, to me, this strikes me very much like my actor friends, where people will say, people want to say you're a stage actor or a film actor, but for most working actors, it's you do stage, you do voiceover, you do film.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of the whole thing. If you happen to play an instrument, you do that too. You go to all these various auditions, and as you did, you get referred by people for another thing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds very similar to that.
Yeah, you're right. It's you kind of get involved, and you love what you're doing so much that this is often I'll be offered a job that pays no money. And at a certain level, you think, oh, well, I'm a professional. Maybe I shouldn't take that. It's beyond, beneath me. What standard is that set? But, you take away the money, so then what's left is the experience. And oftentimes, when you get rid of that money, you can actually have a great experience. You practice more. You want to get more of a reward from the music. And you find that reward sometimes when I guess the formal corporate is gone. And I'm not saying that we should all play for free. I love getting money.
Well, and you can, you're part of a group that's doing things very successfully,
mm-hmm.
so you can make those decisions for the project that really fascinates you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then you have that sort of creative say again. You find that reason why you're playing. I feel like, for any musician who sort of hits that point when they plateau and they think, what am I doing? What's the point of this? You got to ask yourself that, why did I start? What do I enjoy about this? And it comes down to it's not really always the money that you like, it's the performing. So if you're not mm-hmm. enjoying the performing part of it, it can become really, tedious.
I keep hearing performing rising to the top, and I would say, working in theater, you often have to prioritize yourself. So I would say I am an actress who sings
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
plays the harp and moves well, and in that order. It sounds like for you, performer would be first.
Yeah, I would say so too. And I didn't really specialize even after university, when I decided the oboe's the sort of the medium that I have the most skill in, and everything else. So I'm a performance oboist is what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you have coming up? It sounds like you have a lot on your plate usually. What's coming up next for you?
I'm going to different universities as a guest oboist, do master classes and recitals. So there's that. We have some Christmas concerts coming up.
With Quartetto Gelato?
With Quartetto Gelato, yeah. I'm working on getting some good solo concerts going.
Is that
need a good agent if anybody's listening?
Is that, well, I was going to say, it sounds like a lot of this freedom comes from the fact that you're, maybe because you don't have an agent, you're not being packaged by a person who wants to put you into a particular slot and sell you that way.
Yeah, that's, I never thought about that way, but I think you're right.
And so are these solo concerts in concert, so to speak, with your new CD?
With the CD, or stuff inspired by the CD. The CD itself is, every track is different. I've got five different singers, a bunch of different musicians, and I don't think I could combine everybody on one stage.
Hard to get them all there.
Yeah.
So for rehearsal, much less performance.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, so it would be inspired by the CD.
So you put it out there wonderfully. You're looking for an agent. Where do you see their focus leading forward? Or is it, is there a five-year plan, Colin? I'm going to be your mother for a minute now.
Oh, my God.
Is there a five-year plan?
I need that right now. Five-year plan. I kind of had in the back of my head, I thought, I wonder if she's going to ask me about that. And I actually
I haven't ever asked anybody else that. That's just for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Five-year plan.
And it comes from the symbiosis that I've mentioned.
I know it.
Such a similarity.
You do so many different things, and it's kind of, you kind of go where the wind takes you, and you say yes to things, and you end up in a place where you never thought. Mm-hmm. And I never would have ever dreamed that I would have ended up here. I never planned for, you know, being with Gelato, having a solo CD, the Olympics, Cirque du Soleil. I mean, never in a million years. So for me to be thinking about 5 years, mm-hmm. I would love to have, I'd love for along in tandem with Gelato to be doing my fifth solo CD and touring and being a guest speaker and a recitalist. I would love that. That would be incredible. Mm-hmm. I'd love to be writing my own music, working more with composers, doing original commissions. That'd be nice.
So definitely a musical focus, not so much on the acting.
Well, you know, I've noticed, and I'm sure you've noticed too, that there is, you know, when I watch a rock band on stage, when I watch Queen, those guys were actors. Those guys were playing a part. And you know, and sometimes it takes it off the stage. Kiss.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're on stage in costume. They're acting crazy. They're running around doing crazy things. And when we're performing, we're also acting too, and you can choose your character. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, there's sort of a non-choice, which is I'm going to be the traditional black tuxedo, or you can actually make a choice, and you can decide to be an exaggerated version of yourself or whatever it is. So I feel like whenever I play with Gelato, I am performing, I am acting. In fact, I actually do some dancing and some stunts in the show as well.
That doesn't surprise me.
So straight up theater, like a three-month contract, doing a musical theater show. Right now, I don't have the time for that. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel that there's a big hole where that used to be, because I feel like Gelato and my solo stuff fills that void in tandem, which is what I've been trying to do my whole life, is to try and put theater and music together in some sort of meaningful way that doesn't feel imposed.
Oh, that's so lucky.
Yeah.
That you could put it together. Now, I'm going to ask you, I told you I wanted to ask you, I try to ask people some, you know, brass tacks questions about the business. If I may be so bold, you can defer this question and not answer it if you choose.
Yeah.
Quartetto Gelato.
Yeah.
Is it a living? It's an international career, but is it on its own a living?
Well, if I didn't have support from a family, it would be tough, but yes, it is a living.
Because I think that full answer is important for kids to hear that are thinking that they want to be a musician, is that now Gelato is internationally renowned. They have a pretty full performance schedule, and it's still just...
Well, it can be tough, but you know what? Here's the thing is that I never know from year to year what the schedule is going to be like. When I first joined the group, we were on tour 25 days a month. It
wow.
was a long, grueling schedule.
That is hard.
We played lots, we made lots of money, and we had a good, you know, it was great. It was very, very successful.
So that year would have been a living.
That year, yeah. But you know, it's not always like that. If you play full time in an orchestra, you're guaranteed, unless the orchestra gets locked out or something or goes on strike or goes bankrupt, you're guaranteed whatever your salary is.
Yeah, well, that's it. The stability is what they're...
They want the stability, yeah. You know, you can create stability mm-hmm. because we're in a creative business. Mm-hmm. So you can use your music and use your skills and to try and find, if I was just to play Quartetto Gelato, but Quartetto Gelato opens up other doors to me. And I use those and find interesting non-traditional ways to supplement the living so that on the years when...
Like flying through the air in a canoe, playing the violin in a devil's outfit.
As an example.
Okay. I could just... talk to you for hours. I think what I'm going to do is I had asked you to talk to me about the teacher-student relationship.
Yep.
So I'm going to take a break, and we're going to have that available as additional content online.
Okay.
So I'm going to take a break for a moment and come back talking to the endlessly fascinating Colin Mayer. Thank you. And now we're going to hear another cut from his CD, the work of Antonio Pasquali, Concerto on a Theme of Donizetti, with another member of Quartetto Gelato, accordionist Alex Sebastian, Colin Meyer playing the oboe. Okay, we're back now with the additional content for online listeners. I had told Colin in advance, I've been trying to ask working musicians about the teacher-student relationship, the good, the bad, the ugly, the great. So especially with yours, your path has been so different. What have been, you mentioned a little bit about, it sounds like there might have been teachers who were very put off by your sense of humor and performance.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a few. I feel like, I don't know why, but I feel like I had 99% of the time, I was surrounded by very supportive people. So I was able to keep my focus and not, you know, get discouraged. But my oboe teacher was fantastic. David Sussman, he was great. My high school band teacher, junior high, Brian Thurlassius, was great. Mm-hmm. He gave me an oboe to use, and David Sussman let me do whatever I wanted to do in my recitals. Like I said, I was doing the splits in my recital, and as an encore, I played the Flintstones, and you know, just but I was just playing around and having fun, and he didn't want to tell me no. He didn't want to tell me yes either, but he let me do whatever I wanted.
No, but take a pause in that thought, yeah. And let's say the high school teacher gave you the oboe, but you said you didn't have any lessons then.
Right. Yeah. So he was conducting the Navy band, and they had this $8,000 Leray oboe sitting there, and he said, "Hey, you know, you're grade 11 in my band. Would you like to use this?" Holy geez. Yeah, of course. So for 2 years, grade 11 and grade 12, I played on this Leray oboe.
Without lessons?
Yeah, without lessons. I mean, we had he brought in a clinician once in a while. That was sort of good.
But I'm assuming he kind of got you started with basics.
With the band teacher and with the clinician, it was probably once a year I had a lesson, and I was buying homemade reeds from this woman afterwards
on the street corner.
Yeah, and that was it, and that's how that one was. So he was very supportive and let me conduct the band at my graduation, which I turned into a big silly production as well, of course.
Okay, so then get back to the original thought,
yes,
that they were very supportive, and you don't have to name the bad ones, just examples.
Well, you know, one thing I realized is that universities can be, you know, it's a business, and so they weren't always looking out. Some of them weren't always looking out for my best interests.
Ah,
what's good for me. So there was, you know, a one time I remember I was in the youth orchestra, and there's a youth orchestra, this massive, you know, like five oboes in the orchestra, and so I knew that it was a big important deal, and I really wanted to be there. My grandpa was in the hospital with cancer, and he had, you know, just been told he's got, you know, hours to live. Mm-hmm. So I told the conductor, and I said, you know, I really need to not be at this performance so I can be with him. And I got a big guilt trip. I never was threatened with grades or anything, but I really felt like I was. I was pressured into not going to see my grandfather. Mm-hmm. So after the concert, I went to the hospital the next day, and he was asleep, and I never actually got to say goodbye to him. It's very sad, actually.
Yes.
And I had a lot of real animosity towards this professor, and then, you know, he later on, school ends, and in May, there was an extracurricular thing, and I had an audition for Cirque du Soleil at that time. This was a previous, another audition, years earlier than the one for Top.
Okay.
And so at that point, I had learned my lesson, and I had learned to stand up for myself, and I said no, and a lot of tension, but, you know, I guess if I was to give myself advice, you know, as a young me or other people who are in similar positions, I would say that it's really hard when you're young and you're in university, and you, even if you're out of university, you know, what you believe in matters, and what your opinions are matter, and what your ideas are, they matter too. It's okay to have your own thoughts, and I wish that somebody had sort of told me that, because it took me a while. I kind of came into university like that because I was naive. I didn't really know any better But it took me probably about 10 years of going through the system and getting brainwashed, maybe, coming out as a cookie cutter, and then to come out of it and say, whoa, this isn't me, this isn't who I am, this isn't what I want.
I think there's a purpose for making people meet the mold in university, and that purpose is the grading system and to have quantifiable outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I think the flip side of that is then on your graduation day, they say go out and don't follow the rules and think for yourself, but they have specifically curtailed you from doing that during...
Another thing, the business of music.
Yes.
You know, you hear, like, is it really enough? Maybe it was 60 years ago. Maybe it was enough to say, here's how to play your instrument, and here's your theory, and off with you. Go do an audition, because there's, you know, auditions happening all the time, and you'll win an audition, and that'll be that. It doesn't happen like that anymore.
It does for some people. I think that's the hard thing. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm fascinated by your story because it is so very different from the run-of-the-mill, be a child prodigy at the age of 3, be playing with symphonies by the age of 17, go through the system and get your agent by 22 so that you can be an international sensation playing your one instrument. It's so very different from your story, and that's what I think makes your story informative and special and exciting and fun and all of that that makes you you.
Well, thank you.
Are we engaged yet?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess on that note, I better stop the conversation. Thank you so much for spending time with us, with me. It's been such a unique viewpoint, and I think it's both a sobering lesson and an energizing lesson to hear how different your path has been, and yet you are there playing with one of these major international groups that is so highly thought of and also so very inventive, and producing your own work as well. This wonderful CD, Advice from a Misguided Man, by Colin Mayer. And are you on a label per se?
There's no label.
Okay.
I looked into that, and after speaking with getting some legal advice, I decided that keeping all my own music and the rights to my own music was advantageous.
I've so enjoyed talking to you. I greatly appreciate the time that you've spent with us, Colin, much more than I intended, except that I kind of knew that we would be spending more time than I intended. Any parting words, like buy your CD or...
Oh, well, I guess a prerequisite for being a musician is you got at some point flog your CD. So yes, it's Advice from a Misguided Man, and that's me. I'm the Misguided Man, and the CD is available at my website, colinmeyer.com, and you can also buy it online at iTunes or CD Baby.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Colin.
Thank you, Cara. I hope to speak with you again.
Yes.